So the first thing we like to do, it gets boring. I open these interviews the same way every time, and then when I play them, I think, can I come up with something new? The answer is no, I'm too old. So the first thing that we like to do is make sure we have the right band in here, because you look like the band that's supposed to be here. Yeah. But this is our first little test. So would you please introduce yourself to our listening audience?
We are the Dead 60s.
I'm Charlie.
I'm Matt.
And I'm Ben.
Well, you did better already, because half of the people just introduce themselves by name. You're like, hi, I'm Bill, I'm Bob, I'm Joe. And then I say, are you with a band? Right. Because I think in the old days, you know, the boys said, we're the Beatles. Mm. And yeah. I think that's probably a good way to operate. Mm-hmm. So I watched the interview on your website, which was really brilliant, because before I got down to all the written stuff about the band, I actually got to see you and learn a little bit. And I don't know whose idea that was, but that was really smart. Mm-hmm. But what I got from it is that you really worked on the concept of this band. You didn't just get together to play music. You headed out of the gate with an attitude and a sound, and you kind of did conspire, and I mean that in a good way, but you did think about what you wanted your band to be, not just, oh, we're going to play music. Mm. So tell me a little bit about that.
Well, it all kind of came about, you know, we were always sort of interested in punk music and stuff like that, and when we kind of got the band together, we just sort of, we spent a long time sort of locked away in a rehearsal room listening to music, and through our like kind of love of like more sort of traditional kind of British punk, we like discovered reggae music and Jamaican stuff, and even like kind of like punk funk and stuff like that. Mm. And basically over a period of about 9 months, we kind of locked ourselves away, and we listened to music together, we played music together, we wrote music together, and we just got our whole idea of our band together and just worked at it like that. And then, you know, we kind of got picked up and signed before we'd even done a gig.
How dare you be thoughtful, though, about putting together a band? How dare you do that?
Yeah, well, there's so much going on in like Liverpool and in the UK at the time, and we were doing something that was completely different, really, and that was kind of what we found exciting, so that's where the kind of concept came. We were listening to different kind of music from other people, so, you know.
Lots of cool sounds, bombs, outer spacecraft, and like that. You didn't just put guitars in there, you also paid attention a little bit to the vibe.
Yeah.
I mean, lots of fun stuff in there.
Yeah, that was really important to us, to get those like sound effects in and stuff.
It kind of came from, we started off listening to dub music, that was like the basis of it, you know. So those sound effects and all that kind of stuff kind of lent from there. But yeah, that was it was a big basis on starting the band, sounding different from those, just trying to sound like those dub records and the reggae records that we liked.
And you've known each other for quite a while, not just officially in this band. So you did other, you were friends, you were mates, as they say, way before forming the band. So how did that moment suddenly come up, like, okay, we're going to form the band?
Well, it was...
there was just no one left, you know what I mean? One of those. We've kind of known each other, you know, since we were in school and all that kind of stuff, and, you know, played in various bands. So, and in Liverpool, that's what, you know, everyone does. Everyone just gets in bands.
It's kind of the industry, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's, you know,
you all kind of know each other, you know, if you're into music or you're a musician, because Liverpool isn't particularly like a big place, even though like it's a very kind of thriving and buzzing kind of place. It's not actually that big, so you always kind of like, kind of move in the same circles if you're interested in music, or, you know, you like just like to go out and watch bands play. So we kind of knew each other from there as well.
And the West Coast, skipping from Liverpool to back here, I'm going to dart all over the place. It'll confuse the living. Somehow it'll add up to an interview that makes sense. But the West Coast has been really good to you. There is an amazing Anglophile population here, like kind of here and New York. So let's talk about that first, and then we'll get to the in-between a little later. Why do you think the West Coast has you know, been so kind and so enthused about the music?
I suppose it's because there's a lot of the things we're doing are kind of familiar with the people over here. Although, like, they do, a lot of bands over here have mixed up, like, punk and reggae and ska and stuff in a different, more American way. You know, I think what we're doing isn't a million miles away from, you know, the kind of bands people are into over here, so... It's been great. We do our own shows here, and, you know, they all sold out. So,
and you know, when you talk about reggae, there's two types of reggae, because I've gotten lots of British reggae imports, and there's the studio sessions, which are a whole different game from reggae that we think about here. You know, in fact, there's a guy on this radio station that does a reggae show that just blows me away, because I'll listen to it, and I do not personally, I'm not a reggae person. I haven't smoked enough ganja in my life for one reason or another. But he plays, I'll listen to him on Saturday night, and I think, wait a minute, this is not, I mean, it's a definition of reggae, but it's more about, like you said, the dubs and the beat and all of that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the part that you've incorporated into the band. Now, instead of shooting that interview on your website in a very slick dressing room, you're hanging out in a high-rise apartment complex. I assume it's Liverpool. You look like a bunch of normal blokes, and your music kind of reflects the life you've led so far. So tell me a little bit about that, because you didn't do the glamorous dun-dun-dun. You shot that thing hanging out in a high-rise brick.
Yeah, well, that's just the way it's all been done. We record in Liverpool, like in a little studio, and, you know.
And we're going to get there in a few minutes, obviously.
Yeah, but, you know, it's the same kind of thing. It's like, you know, there's no point in pretending you're Elton John when you're not, you know what I mean?
Nobody, because this is radio, nobody in this room is wearing really bright, well, I am, but no one else is wearing strange glasses, so.
No.
There's no comment on mine. We'll leave that alone. Can you tell me, okay, now the name, I've been walking around all day to people and saying, you're dead 60s. But here in America, and everybody looks at me, well, yeah, that's great. I'm dead and I'm from the 60s. But I don't know about the Mercy seal of approval and what that really means. So is it because the Mercy was such a cool decade? You know, that was a cool decade of Mercy.
Mercy's actually a river in Liverpool.
Yes, River Cross the Mercy, Jerry and the Pacemakers.
Ferry Cross the Mercy.
I've asked several bands from Liverpool if indeed they were making it up, if that was a real, and they said, yes, it is.
No, it's true.
It's kind of, I mean, you know, the name's...
Can you launch into a little Ferry Cross the Mercy? Just kidding. but the dead 60s thing, do people really come up to each other and say, you're dead 60s?
Not really. I mean, it kind of happened to us when we used to rehearse in this place where there are a lot of other bands, and a lot of bands take off that whole Merseybeat thing. You know, the city's obsessed with this, with kind of what happened back then. So a lot of bands would say, you know, we sound dead 60s, whatever. So for us, it was a bit of a... You know, a bit of a piss take to call our band that.
And just to segue into that, this will either come out smooth or really dumb, but the radical lyrics you've got are, you know, I mean, it doesn't sound 60s, it sounds more 80s to me. I mean, in the 60s, you know, all these Liverpool bands in the 60s were like, tra-la-la-la, love is great, and, you know, all of that sort of stuff.
Well, that's it. We're not into that, so we kind of went the opposite direction.
Yeah, so tell me about that little combination when you were conjuring up the band.
Well, it wasn't really a combination. We were just into what we were into, and then the name was kind of like an in-joke, you know, for all those, you know, 60s bands, and for the, you know, we grew up by Penny Lane and places like that, you know. And, you know,
so Penny Lane's a real place. The Beatles didn't make that up
either. That's my neighbourhood.
And there is a barber shop on it.
The things I'm learning.
It's all real.
So by the time you get to your teenage years, you just kind of want to reject all that kind of stuff that you've been hammered with over the years.
Must be kind of weird growing up in a place that there's more song lyrics being, you know, iconic song lyrics being written about.
Yeah.
We have that here in San Francisco. It's the same kind of crazy thing. Now, I have this thing that either annoys people or is the truth. British bands and record companies who have British bands here treat Americans differently. And what I mean by that is I actually went to your British website first and then discovered there was one was red and one was yellow, I believe. There was a British website and an American website. Yeah. And the first single that I received here, I think, was Riot Radio. But Britain was introduced to you with a single before. And then I read that the British vinyl, by mistake, had the American version, God forbid. So why do we get something different? And I love the apology for it, because the poor British people, oh my God, the poor British people got the American vinyl. Yeah. Oh my goodness.
I know, it was terrible.
Oh, that's a tragedy.
Yeah, it was,
Well, you know, we just did, it was more of a timescale thing. It was like, we did the album and the Americans, you know, wanted it first. And then by the time that we got round to doing Britain, we had time to remix some tracks and try some.
But you were signed
things.
To Delta Sonic, right?
Yeah.
British label.
Yeah. Mm.
But the Americans, they wanted it here earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We want it all first.
Yeah, exactly. It was just because.
That's just what we do.
It really came from the first time we toured in America. You know, it like, how do I say this? More kind of like, we got a really big response, like quite quick, which is sort of unusual for a British band to come over and get like such like a warm response, or however, you know, so.
So they struck whilst the iron was hot, yeah, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Take it while you can.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Got to accept
now,
it.
You got the tour with a young guy named Morrissey.
Yeah.
But I read on your site that you never actually met him. Is he that protected? What is there, like a cone of silence around this man?
Just, a couple of security guards.
but seriously, you didn't pass each other in dressing rooms?
Yeah, he's very
him,
shy.
Yeah, you know. I passed him on the stairs one time, but he didn't even, you know, say hello then. I just said hello to his security guard.
Yeah, they were nice.
So you just used Morrissey for whatever you could.
Yeah, we kind of, we picked him up and sort of tossed him away.
Picked him up and tossed. Yeah. I picked Morrissey up, and then the back of the T-shirt says, and tossed him away.
Yeah, make of it, you know, what you will.
Dear Morrissey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's not much on interviews, let me tell you.
No. It's great fun, though.
No. I don't know much about your producer, but I love the name Central Nervous System.
Yeah.
If I were going to have a producer, other than Katie, of course, Central Nervous System would be the one. Did his mom name him that? And who is he really? Here's our new baby, Central.
Central.
And his middle name, and then they disagreed about the middle name. Well, I want Nervous, and then the mom said, I want System.
Yeah, yeah.
He just settled on CNS for short, you know.
Yeah. he's
tell me about the mystery man.
Well, he's a bit of a, you know, shadowy figure.
He likes to get stoned a lot.
And he's a bit of a recluse, and he doesn't want people to know who he is. So, you know,
hence the reggae approach on the sessions.
Yeah. He's very private, and he's very eccentric as well.
Mm. What else has he produced?
He's been like he's been involved in like every major scene that's like come out of like the Northwest, probably in some description over the. Over the last 20 years.
Does he have a website, centralnervoussystem.com?
No, he keeps out of the public eye. Yeah. You
know? He hates technology.
He's like Zorro, you know, that character. He's like Zorro. That's what he's kind of like, you know, but like the music version.
So basically you guys all have like in blood somewhere on your body, CNS.
Well,
tattoos in various places. Yeah.
Tattooed on my brain.
Okay, bands either, we ask this question every time, which kind of makes it boring, but really is important. The role of the producer has really changed. Either a producer like Rick Rubin or whoever comes in and they take a band and they do what they do with them, like Phil Spector did back in the old days. Mm-hmm. You know, and half the bands, and I won't mention any of them, turn around and say, this is rubbish. You know, I wish the producer wasn't there. They took our sound and they destroyed it. You know, and even if their records sell millions, they still resent the producer. Mm. So tell me about working with the Epiphanous Central Nervous System and what that did to your sound. Good thing, bad thing, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, he just kind of bullied us, really.
No, he didn't.
Bullied us for about 3 months. Yeah. Came out with a record.
And then we came out with a record, yeah.
No, he kind of refined the sound, and we were kind of all working on the same page, just basically getting on with it, really. It was more of a case of experimenting. It was our first time in the studio, and, you know, he gave us a lot of help and a lot of advice, you know.
He was good at kind of, you know, switching you on to other music and, you know, music that I'd never listened to. Like, for example, like there was some stuff, like some mad CDs he'd bring in, like actually from like New York, like funk punk CDs and things like that. So he was good at like switching us on to new things and opening our eyes and just kind of really just getting the job done.
This is the weirdest thing. My microphone was doing strange stuff. I thought it was you guys. What happened to my microphone?
Could be the spirit of the Central
I think it
system.
Is. Yeah. But he works in kind of a dark, kind of older studio, and you said that you had to walk home through a bad area at night, and paranoia made its way to the songs, and doubled by the time you recorded them.
Mm-hmm.
And does fear breed good rock and roll?
I think it does. Yeah. Well, any strong emotion will, you know, make a good song, so fear's, you know, good enough for
pretty
us.
Good one, isn't it?
But was it? You also said like old decks, like it was an old. Are they?
Yeah, it looks a bit like this studio,
No, you know, a nice way. Yeah, no, there's loads. He was great at like kind of. He had all these mad old reggae machines. That's what he called them.
And reggae machines.
Yeah, and he applied them.
You turn it on and it goes.
I don't want to lose you. It's a bit scientific, but he applied them to the song. You see what I mean? And then afterwards,
carry the coefficient of the one, make a left turn at
exactly. Yeah. all of that kind of shit.
Plugged them all into the desk.
So this guy was really strange.
Oh, he was. Yeah he's very odd. Yeah, but he has a collection of these machines that he applied to all of our songs. And
have you been to his house? Does he have like machines for other things?
Oh, I don't know.
He's got a coffee machine. Yeah. He's got a coffee machine.
He's got a coffee machine. Was this an odd coffee machine?
Probably. Yeah.
It turns it back. It starts with grounds and never mind.
Yeah, no, it was. I don't know. He's got all kinds of stuff.
Okay, you've done a ton of dates with Social Distortion, which I kind of think is the perfect bill to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. Have they shared a lot of good stories with you from all their years in rock and roll? Or are they like Morrissey and well protected?
No, they're really nice. Like actually, we've had a few good nights with them and stuff, haven't we?
Yeah, any good stories shared?
No, I don't think you can.
I don't think we're really allowed to repeat them.
I was trying. Yeah. But now it's the end of the line on this US tour.
Yeah.
Of which this is US tour number two or number three?
Three.
Ouch.
Yeah.
You've been touring incessantly. Do you know the songs by now?
Some
of them, sometimes they sound good, don't they? Yeah.
Some days, yeah.
can you, but it appears that you gave up your tour diary back in 2004, according to your website.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a bit, yeah.
So can you share over these 5 months of insane, joyful traverses, traverses, is that a word? Traversing.
Sounds good.
Traversing the United States. Can you share some special moments with me?
I nearly drowned in San Diego.
Nice.
That was a highlight. that
was a highlight.
We almost
got rid of him.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, so that was a lot of fun.
There's been a few mad ones. Yeah, that was a bit of a scary one. Got caught in a riptide and had to get rescued by a lifeguard and all that kind of stuff. We almost got arrested in where was that? By Atlanta.
Atlanta, I think, for setting off fireworks at the side of the road. Apparently, they're illegal in certain states that we didn't know about.
But it was bonfire night. Well, it wasn't bonfire night.
But that's what we told.
That's what we told them though.
Yeah. Bonfire night's an English thing where someone tried to blow up the Houses of Parliament. So we set off fireworks.
Look, John Lennon got arrested for one joint. So you think they're going to fall for bonfire night?
No, they did. They swallowed it.
Yeah, they did.
They swallowed it.
You guys are good. You're good. Like other young kids. What the hell doesn't matter?
You got to be quick.
What about the strangest thing on the tour itself? At performances, anybody do anything really... like just out there and odd? Any good memories from that?
Well, but Ben usually kind of actually... I think the other night, his kind of stage trick that he did was he managed to jump on top of the drum kit and then fall off it and kind of fell on the floor and was kind of rolling around on his back with his guitar, you know, just like a crazy man.
Yeah.
So that was quite
That's always entertaining when that happens.
Yeah.
We enjoy it anyway.
But yeah, I liked it. But he hurt his leg this time. He's got a big bump in it.
It's true.
You guys, this is a band, you know? Come on, be good. Crying out loud.
Doing all that.
But speaking of which, I see in December you're finally back home and you're playing with two of my favorite bands that actually have recently been in this studio, Maximo Park and the Kaisers.
Oh, yeah.
But you're all very different, but you're all kind of making up the mix and the new mix.
Yeah.
Because Maximo and the Kaisers and you really are, you know, you share certain things, you share melody, but you are very, very different. Mm-hmm. And yet... having now talked to all of you, it's really kind of interesting because it's a good way to think about what's coming out of Great Britain today as opposed to some of those other bands that shall go nameless that, you know, we read on the front of that thing starting with an N and M and E.
Oh, the enemy.
And they are all more important than you know what, and they're all introduced with We Are the Greatest Thing That Ever Lived.
Yeah.
And I think, well, the Kaisers have become big by nature, but they're nice guys. Yeah. And Maximo is, you know, is still in a position where they're working their way up. And But tell me a little bit about, you know, being part of that whole gang. The Kaisers have kind of, although you could say the Kaisers have risen above it in terms of the press.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure they really have because they have one record out. So that, you know, that doesn't really mean anything in the long run.
No, it's a generation thing, really, isn't it? It's the post like. Britpop. I mean, we were probably all listening to Britpop when we were like, you know, a bit younger, 15, 16, something like that. And then, you know, give it a few years to mature, and then everyone's kind of come out with their own bands. In Liverpool, especially, there's been a lot of bands come out, the Coral and the Zoosons, and there's just something. You know, I think it's just a generation thing. People went back to writing songs on guitars, and and going that avenue, which is
actual
nice.
Writing songs. What a concept!
Yeah. Well, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, in England for a while, there was no bands really in the charts. It was all pop new, like proper
kind
pop
of manufactured, you know?
Pop music. And it's good to see bands sort of getting in the charts again, and the general public like not being interested in that kind of stuff.
Now, you did include an entire album of all dubs. Good for dancing in the clubs?
It's more like sitting at home.
Because I know that, and I'm not doing comparison, but we know that the Clash loved doing stuff like that. A lot of those classic bands that you guys studied loved doing that, giving people instrumentals so club DJs could do their own mixes and really extend and have some fun with it.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about the process of doing the dubs, because that's really kind of new old, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
The dubs actually kind of came very easily. In the way that, because the way we recorded
it. Did Central Nervous System have a dub machine?
Yeah, he just turns the reggae machine up one notch. It goes to dub.
From reggae to dubs.
Yeah, it's quite complicated. Yeah. But
it's a complicated process.
Layman's terms, that's how.
No, yeah, but we just...
Do you have a picture of this reggae machine?
No, it's very secret operation.
What colour is it?
It's blue, and he's got coat and trainers that match it.
No, come on.
No, he is. He's got a bright blue coat.
So this man walks around Liverpool,
I saw him
colour-coded.
Walking down the street with a bright blue top on, bright blue trainees, and a blue reggae machine under his arm. That's not a lie, that's the truth.
And he thought about it before he went out. That's the strangest part.
Do the local bobbies know about this man?
I think they've run
into him a few times.
Yeah, so. I think so.
So the last thing we like to do, we're going to do a session, but we're going to rearrange the microphones and the audience knows that we cheat and then edit it all neatly. But the last thing that we like to do, and your session is going to become part of this, become kind of a trademark of the show, is called a musical sandwich. And what we want to do is take two of your tunes as the bread, but then I want you to fill in as much music as you would like to of anybody's between, and I will play it exactly as you ask for it.
Great, cool.
So hit me with a few tunes apiece that you'd like to be part of your musical sandwich.
I'd like a song by The Stranglers called Get a Grip.
Okay.
What do you want to do, Ben?
We need a few from each of you.
Public Enemy, Bring the Noise.
Cool. Yeah, and by the way, I'll edit this so it sounds smooth as silk, so take your time.
Oh, great.
Oh, yeah. Don't worry. It's not going to be like...
I mean, we've got a big list. We've got like a top 10.
Go ahead.
Have you got any Lee Perry?
I can find anything you can possibly ask for.
Should
you wouldn't
believe. Should I Lee Perry? You can find it on the Arcology.
And how about I Heard It Through the Grapevine by The Slits.
By The Slits. Mm-hmm. Last week it was Marvin Gaye, and the week before it was the Gladys Knight and the Pips, and then someone said Nina Simone has a version of it.
Really?
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, it's a good song.
But By The Slits, I love it because no one's done that. Cool.
The Slits are great.
Yes.
Is there a certain ratio tune we could do?
Yeah, Shack Up, A Certain Ratio.
Yeah.
I don't know, Dance by ESG, if you've got that.
Give me a couple more.
Talking Heads. You could do Once in a Lifetime by the Talking Heads.
Love it.
Yeah.
They just remastered all of their stuff. In fact, we gave away a box set, and they remixed all of it in Dolby 5.1 on one side of the CD. It's pretty cool stuff.
Yeah.
Especially that kind of stuff, you know, in surround is kind of bizarre.
Yeah.
Better, maybe not as good as the reggae machine, however.
Yeah. Just get one more. Do a Clash tune if you want.
Yeah. Overpowered by Funk.
Yeah,
Overpowered by Funk by The Clash.
Excellent.